You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another edition of the M Squared TechCast here on the PodcastDetroit.com network. What number are we up to now, Mr. Mike?
122 or 23? 22?
I believe so. Yes.
122.
Okay, that was the voice of Jessica.
Our peerless engineer.
One of these days we're going to get that
studio
cam.
Manager.
Yeah, studio manager. Yeah. Yes. Hi, Mucky Muck is what we call her
now.
So.
Okay.
And we have on the phone, as we digress. Oh, you've returned from Niagara Falls.
Indeed.
Did you turn slowly?
Slowly I turned, and went step by step. Yeah,
yep.
Right.
Okay, good.
Yep.
So he was visiting his son last week, and Jess and I were going, he's not answering. What's wrong? Has he had an accident or something?
I could have sworn I told you, but apparently not. Yeah. And I wasn't going to be here last week.
Wow, so. Yeah, we're getting ready to call the police, you know? So
it would have to be the OPP
yes.
know, over there. Yes, I love those signs.
Those Mounties.
Yes.
Yeah. Love them. All right, so we have from the other side of the state over in the St. Joe area, Matt Quinn, president of Great Lakes Drone Company. And he was involved in that big shoe that we did last week, IoT Tech Connect.
That you're now successfully recovered from, by the way?
Oh, God, I was tired. I mean, I was just exhausted. It was, you know, but it's over. It's behind us. We learned a lot. And we met a lot of new friends. And Matt, I hadn't met him previous to the show, although we did have him on this show earlier this year. But I didn't get a chance to, when you hear commercial drones, you know, you have this thing in your head. But when I saw what he brought in, I was just amazed. I mean, this gear, he had some of those drones that were like $20,000, right, Matt?
That is correct.
Yeah, they're big. And they do crop spraying with them.
I was going to say, what's on a $20,000 drone, Matt? I'm curious.
It's heavily armed, you know.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
So, no, that's the government.
Well, yes. Yeah, right. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, it kind of all depends on, like, the payload aspect. So one of the drones that we had at the IoT Tech Connect was basically outfitted for some of the search and rescue aspects. Hmm. Because that's a big, obviously, hot topic of drones are good type aspect. So, you know, we had a $6,000 camera, thermal camera on a $6,000 drone with, you know, another, you know, a couple thousand dollars in lighting and, you know, a huge, you know, spotlight system on it and everything. So when you add it all up, yeah, it comes to a $20,000 drone flying over.
And then you had another one that it was like the Goodyear blimp, except scaled down, where you could do advertising on it, which I found intriguing. That little, not actually very large drone. I'm not sure what the wingspan on that sucker was, but you had that device underneath. It looked like about what, 2 feet by 4 feet that you could put advertising on and LED lights.
Well, actually, it's a little bit larger than that. It's actually 5 feet 6 inches long by 27 inches high.
Okay.
It's a full color, dual sided, 2700 pixel dual sided LED display board. So basically, you know, if you're a company that wants to advertise your brand or do something from an advertising standpoint, within our FAA regulatory aspect, we can pretty much kind of throw it up anywhere, especially if we have time to plan the event and everything and stuff and, you know, get it up and advertise your brand and advertise whatever you want. So it's a new era in aerial advertising and brand management and advertising. We're the only company in the world that I know of that has this because it's completely custom made. And we debuted it at the Super Bowl this year. So.
And you're advertising Lyft, if I recall, right?
No, not for Super Bowl. That was another project that we did after that. That was a project, and basically they had a concert going on in which they wanted to direct the concert goers to the Lyft parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
So between a combination of that and a couple other drones, basically, instead of like lighting up the sidewalk towards where the parking lot was, we lit up the air to where the parking lot was.
So tell me a little bit about this blimp thing. How would you achieve lift in this thing? Is it heated inside, or is it filled with helium or something? How's that work?
No, it's not really a blimp. I just used it as an example. Like, the Goodyear blimp flashes the advertising on the side. Why don't you go ahead and explain that, Matt, how that all worked on your drone?
Right. So the one that you saw is actually like a LED display board that gets mounted on one of our larger drones.
Okay.
And then we just fly it around. But we do have custom aerial advertising blimps that operate just like a radio controlled drone aspect, in which is helium filled. And we utilize, different types of motors and different types of control features to control it. So we can either make a custom 9 foot, 19 foot, or we could do a 9 foot, but whatever size you want. And the only problem with some of those is just the amount of wind that we can operate in. And even with the aerial advertising drone, there's still limitations on wind dynamics. But we can pretty much do anything from an aerial advertising standpoint. We even have blimps that have the LED boards built into them, just like the Goodyear blimp. So just on a smaller scale.
I know if it hadn't been for the weather, we had everything going on. We had a major traffic accident in front of the hotel that blocked the entrance, and high winds and snow. I was waiting for the frogs to fall next, But one of the things he was going to do if the weather was going to cooperate would be to put up one of his drones above the hotel and do some live shots, let people see that. But 20-mile-an-hour winds or 25, couldn't do that.
It was more like 40, I think.
Well, yeah, it was just
howling through that parking structure behind the Troy Marriott.
Oh, yeah. So, unfortunately, not able to do that. Go ahead.
The larger drone could have handled the wind aspects, but, it was more the precipitation that was with the wind that kind of kept us at bay.
All right, cool. Then also the other aspect of it, well, two aspects. One was the drone swarm that people, if they watch the Olympics opening and closing ceremonies. I watched it and I wasn't sure what I was looking at. And then afterwards you go, oh, that was a drone swarm. And they put the Olympic rings in the sky. And I guess that's really getting popular now in lieu of fireworks, because obviously fireworks are very expensive. So we're going to see more drone shows, you think?
Oh, I'm sure. And fireworks won't go away. In fact, two of the shows that we're doing this year is actually a combination of drone light show and fireworks show. So you get, you get both aspects built in together, which is definitely, an intriguing planning process from a logistical standpoint to make sure none of the fireworks take down our drone.
But
we're working with a couple major firework companies on, putting everything together and stuff. So that'll be entertaining. We have about 35 shows booked so far this year, and we get requests every day. We're adding more. We'll publish our actual, calendar here shortly. We actually got asked over the weekend to participate in an air show. So not only will we be doing stuff during the air show, but we'll be doing drone light show at night as part of the air show and everything. So, there's a lot of different aspects, from a safety standpoint, obviously drones are safer. We can control them versus once you launch the firework, it can go anywhere, but it's also more eco-friendly. We're not putting any emissions into the air or, leaving any parts behind from, the explosion aspects of, the canisters that they're in. So it really all depends on how you look at it. I don't think fireworks will ever truly go away. Everybody likes the big bangs and everything, but I think eventually you'll see more combination shows.
Yeah, and then the other thing that I thought was intriguing was we had Governor Snyder there, and he spent a lot of time with you. He must have spent, 15 minutes up there. He was quite intrigued with all that. Of course, he's being a nerd and all that. He would get off on that, but... But he really enjoyed that. Of course, we have Steve Dantas here from the VR AR Association, who was also in that area doing exhibits, and the governor was over at your spot too, right, Steve?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think he is definitely a lover of technology. He knows what he's doing. And I think he's got his vision set on, you know, how do you make Michigan a center of this area, right? I mean, how do you bring technology to the center?
Right.
And drones, VR, AR, AI, that's the way to go.
Absolutely. So so I think you worked a deal out with the governor. You're going to do something with the state of Michigan later this year, right?
Yeah, I can't really talk about what exactly we're going to do yet, but
who would we tell?
When it happens,
it's just
you'll definitely
here.
Know about it.
Okay. And then I found out a real hush-hush project you were involved in that you probably don't want to talk about, but you did show me a picture, so then put it in fair game that you did do a little teaching seminar for some of these agencies with 3 and 4 letters in their names about drones, but you can't really talk much about that, but that did take place, right?
Yes, that did take place. You know, we did, we have worked with several government agencies on several different projects, and it's always fun when you get to play the bad guy for somebody.
Yes. So playing the role of the evil drone guy, and then the government agencies could figure out how to bring him down. So, including I'm not sure if you've trained it, but I saw a picture of a Falcon that was bringing a drone down.
Oh yeah, that's actually very common in a couple of countries in over in Eastern Europe. There's some studies and so forth in which they worked on training falcons to bring down drones, and so there's some specific commercial areas in Eastern Europe and some governmental areas in which they use falcons to bring down drones that are in places that they're not supposed to be.
Yeah. Okay. All right, we've got, 2 minutes or so left, so why don't we talk a little bit about Great Lakes Drone Company. I know you were saying you're expanding rapidly, and you might be looking for some staff. I don't know if you want to talk about that or not, but are you hiring? That's a Matt question.
I stole
your question, Matt.
You stumped on my question.
I know.
Mike. Okay.
we put out a notice on a couple drone sites yesterday. That we're hiring for some part-time help for some of the projects that we have going on. We'll be making a more formal release over the next couple of weeks on our website of what positions we're hiring for, what we're looking for, and everything, specifically in regards to some sales aspects, some marketing aspects, some logistical management aspects, travel management, and we're also taking on interns. We're taking on some performance music integration interns. We do have some GIS interns that are working with us right now on some of our survey map projects. And then we also have some UAS drone interns from a few colleges that are coming on board this summer. So, the nice thing about drone technology is it handles many aspects, from video feed to building to electronics to GIS to, basically anything that you're involved in, what we do, we could possibly take an intern in. So, check out our website as we update it over the next week or so, and we'll have some intern spots available if anybody's interested.
We'll have to leave it at that. So we probably should give the website address since we got them all lathered up here. So what is that website address?
It'll be www.greatlakesdronecompany.com, all spelled out, greatlakesdronecompany.com. And you can find us on Facebook at Great Lakes Drone.
Okay.
And Twitter and Instagram and everything else.
All right. Thanks a lot, Matt Quinn of Great Lakes Drones Company in St. Joseph, right? Yep. And we'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening on the PodcastDetroit.com network.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU 5th among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches.
Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast.
And we have with us Victor Pitko. Gosh, I've known Victor for... goes back to my Free Press days, and you were just a PR guy doing something or other, and then you've turned into this Renaissance man doing everything. He's a painter. I don't know if he's a singer. But
no singing.
No, thank God. And then I know you're an actor, producer, independent filmmaker, bon vivant, man about town, that sort of thing. I get your Facebook feed, so I see all these different movies that you're in. You always seem to involve Nazis. What's that all about? I mean, it's like you're a Nazi or something.
There weren't my choice. I mean, I auditioned and got the parts, but I think the Holocaust is going to be a favorite subject for filmmakers for quite a while yet.
Yeah. Okay. And with them is Ed Gardner, who's I don't know your background, Ed. I know you're working with Victor on this independent film that you're producing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm also a painter, but I'm a film producer. I've produced a couple feature films, a sci-fi TV show. Yeah. I've been doing stuff around Detroit for about the last 20 years.
Okay. And you got together with Victor, huh? That must be interesting, right? So, I'm involved in this sort of tangentially in the sense that we're helping them promote this because I think it's a worthy project. They have a new FundMe campaign that's underway so they can get the digital promotion for a film project moving forward. And I'll let you explain the film project because you know it much better than I do.
Oh, thanks, Mike. The project is called Bad Water, Small Town, Deaf Ears. It's a documentary. It's about the contamination of the nation drinking water by a group of chemicals called PFAS. It's a tongue twister name, but it represents about 15 chemicals that are either per or polyfluorinated chemicals compounds. Industry has been using for the last 50 or 60 years. Some familiar names are like Teflon and Scotchgard. They're great at water-resistant and stain-resistant products. However, they've been a source of illnesses for those who have become connected to them, both in the manufacture and the disposal. And it's airborne, it's waterborne. It's transmitted by other animals such as fish and wildlife that we consume. Practically 98% of all Americans has some level of PFAS in their bodies right now. The nasty stuff is not eliminated very quickly. It's bioaccumulates. In other words, once it's in the body, it's there for a large number of years. It doesn't go away very quickly. So those solutions that some of the municipalities have come up with in terms of filtering it out doesn't really filter it out of the bodies. And there's health issues that continue on through adulthood if you're a child and you've consumed some of the water.
And we have several locations in Michigan where there's pretty bad contamination. And I just found out this morning that my home, not hometown, but where I'm living now, Ann Arbor, is one of those, as well as Rockford, where Wolverine Worldwide has had a tannery for, I don't know, a century or more. And then the Oscoda up there, I know there's an Air Force, closed Air Force base up there that was using the same chemicals for fire retardants for when planes crash and whatnot. And then they leached into the water as well, right? So, but I guess the common denominator, except for Ann Arbor, is they're all small communities.
For a large part, there are communities that have been under the radar of government agencies, communities of population with 10,000 or less. Just are flying too low for government to take much action on. But they represent maybe 90% of the small water systems that are providing water services to the communities. So there's the number of changes depending upon which site you go to, which website you go to find out information. That's another problem we'll talk about in a second. But maybe upwards of 50 million Americans have water sources right now that are untreated and being contaminated on a daily basis in their consumption of drinking water. Talking about firefighting foams, there are maybe 50 Air Force naval bases nationwide that have been using the foam that's made of the same chemical and their training exercises for firefighting. So they've been dumping large amounts of this onto the ground, which has now been seeping into the waterfers. And we like to think of our Great Lakes as being pure and representing all that's great about natural bodies of water, but they are now threatened with the PFAS contamination. In Oscoda, there's a huge plume coming off the Air Force base that is, or that has maybe now entered into the water stream, which means those communities downriver or downstream from the lakes are also being threatened.
Well, it's creeping into Lake Superior too, you were saying, right? Or near Lake Superior?
Well, Lake Huron is the one that Oscoda is on.
Oh, and, okay.
There are sites everywhere coming on board on a daily basis that we're just learning about, and it's quite frightening, the extent of contamination. It's very the chemical has been used in a lot of products, Gore-Tex, as I said, Teflon, the nonstick cooking surfaces, in textiles, in carpeting. It's amazing that the government has been so lax in terms of regulating this chemical. They've known about it for 50 years. There are some lawsuits that have been filed.
I was going to say, what's the science on this? Can you tell me what the studies have, good controlled studies have shown on this?
There aren't any good controlled studies yet.
Oh, great.
As I said, it's been an unregulated chemical. And
why don't you talk about some of the side effects, what it can actually produce? That'll scare people even more.
Well, there's a lot of side effects, and the thing about the side effects is they're still discovering them, because up until recently there hasn't really been a lot of in-depth research of what this chemical does in the body. And because it stays in the body so long, they don't really know what the long-term effects are, because the half-life in the environment is like 12,000 years. The half-life in the body is like 30 years. So and they're working with standards that say, your lifetime exposure can be no more than 70 parts per trillion. That's the EPA's official line in the sand. Some of the scientists that are doing the more recent research are saying there is no safe level because it doesn't leave the body, and it keeps piling up if you're continually exposed to it. So having a number like 70 parts per trillion is actually meaningless in terms of the way human beings are actually interacting with
it. But, I mean, it affects the immune system. They think it's carcinogenic, all sorts of stuff, right?
It affects the immune system. It affects the thyroid gland. It affects there's some links to cancer. It's all over the place. It's not like just one thing that it's affecting in the body. I mean, people are getting tumors from it. People are having their gallbladders removed. It's like in upstate New York, there's a small town called Hoosick Falls, which is where we kind of started our research. I mean, pretty much everyone in that town is sick in one way or another, but they all have different systems. And the way it was first noticed by the local people was that the deaths by cancer rates were off the chart. And it took a man whose dad died, who worked in the plant, and his doctor, who started doing research when this man went to him and said, hey, could this be connected to my dad's job? And they started doing research, and they realized that deaths by cancer were like way above the national average.
And what was made at the plant in question?
It was plumbing tape.
Yeah, Teflon tape that plumbers use to wrap pipes when they threw the thread.
I mean,
sealant?
Everybody who's ever fixed a kitchen sink has used this stuff.
Yeah, right.
You know?
In fact, one of my summer jobs when I was in high school was winding the tape up onto spools. And I had a neighbor friend who worked in the lab. He would come out coated with this white powder. He would be smoking cigarettes, eating sandwiches. Unfortunately, he died at a very young age of cancer.
Oh, my God. Oh, man.
So let's talk a little bit about the where folks – let's kind of interject in here where they can go to, if they're interested in helping support your independent film, and then we'll get more into that. But what's the address for your GoFundMe project?
All right. It's www.GoFundMe, one word, GoFundMe.com / Bad Water Part 2. Again, that's Bad Water Part 2, one word, Part two is the second phase of our fundraising effort. Our first part was to fund a trip to upstate New York and into Oscoda, where we conducted interviews with some of the people who have been active in bringing the issue to attention of legislators and lawmakers.
And you've already shot a lot of film. I'm not. How many minutes of film have you shot?
Hours? Altogether is probably a couple of hours, okay. But we've narrowed it down to about a. We have several versions of it. This one is about a 7-minute version that's on the GoFundMe page, which gives pretty good background into the issue and what people need to do to make their. Representatives aware of the situation and to enlist their help.
Do you have a somewhat more longer form film in mind for the final version? Or?
It's going to be a full feature, 60 okay. minutes or more.
Okay. All right.
We got about 3 minutes left, so let's talk a little bit. You're going to get this $50,000 together. I'll help you with as best we can, and then that'll be used for what?
Well, the $50,000 is for pre-planning and doing some of the early production work. We're going to be traveling to 4 communities to either do second filming or initializing some of our interviews and filming. And we're going to Merrimack, New Hampshire, Hoosick Falls, New York, going back to Oscoda, Michigan, and returning to Rockford, Michigan, where the contamination is at a level that's unprecedented. It's probably the largest concentration of the chemical in the ground in the world.
Mm. And, of course, Rockford, having lived in West Michigan, is a very affluent community, and they may or may not be aware this is going on, right?
There has been some very good coverage by the media in terms of talking about the issue and talking about how difficult it is to deal with. But still, there are many, many people, because of the confusing nomenclature that's being used talking about the chemicals, there must be 5 or 6 main chemicals that have PFOS, PFOA, PFNA, PFDA, and so on, abbreviations, and no one can really understand what they are by their name. We have yet to come up with a term that says, other than PFAS, what these chemicals are called and why they're important to know about and how to deal with them.
The thing I found most scary about this in looking at this before the show today was the fact that until recently, this stuff was used in food packaging, yeah. Right? You know, popcorn bags, fast food containers, pizza boxes.
It was very good at keeping the boxes and the containers free of the food, yes,
yeah.
Because of their resistance to the stickiness.
Yeah.
You could pretty much look at any product where it involves waterproofing, stain resistant, or not sticking. They probably use these chemicals.
Okay. We've only got about a minute left, so let's go back to the GoFundMe site.
Give them a couple more times.
Yep. Or if somebody wants to reach out to you personally, can they do that?
Yes. You can reach me at my email address, which is my name, Victor Pytko, VictorPytko, at att.net. That's probably the best way to reach me is through email. Or go to the site and you'll have a way of communicating directly from the GoFundMe page, which is, again, www.gofundme.com/badwaterpart2.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. That was Victor Pytko and his partner on this project, Ed Gardner, put together a film, independent film, that will raise awareness about the threat that this particular chemical causes just about everybody, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you again soon, I hope. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast.
And we have another player from last week's IoT Tech Connect on the line. We have Amit Dhotan, who is the president, I think the CEO as well, of, now, is it Caramba? How do I pronounce that?
Caramba Security.
Yeah, okay.
Right. And I'm the CEO, yeah.
CEO. All right. So and what his company is Israeli company. I think you're based in Ann Arbor, though, right? Is that where you're based?
Oh, well, we moved to Bloomfield Hills.
Oh, okay.
Recently.
Yeah. All right. So I met him through, I was at a press tour last summer with the Israeli Foreign Ministry, and then they introduced me to some Israeli companies when I got back. And one of them I heard about was Caramba, that when we were putting together a panel on how to keep the bad guys out of autonomous vehicles, his company came up and we recruited him and had him on the panel. So, and unfortunately, I was so busy running around making sure everything was going smoothly, I didn't get a chance to sit in. So how did your panel go last week?
I think it was quite exciting, well moderated. Questions. So overall, it was a very good panel.
Okay. So one of the things, you give us some talking points here, because I want people to clearly understand what's going on in the threat posed by the bad guys with connected vehicles, right? I mean, so what's the difference between current cars and future connected and autonomous vehicles? I drive an older car. I'm not worried about it getting hacked. But the new cars, you got some real issues, right?
Yeah. So at the outset, the whole wave of new technologies being applied to the connected vehicle, soon to be autonomous vehicle, basically put in place to to reduce the number of fatalities and accidents. Nowadays, every year, the average number is 40,000, a little bit more than that, of people killed in accidents. If we divide it to the days in the year, we have an enormous number of 110 on the average people die every day from accidents. So the whole idea was to bring connectivity technologies and add a lot of sensors to help us drive better, keep us in lane, warn us from other vehicles, warn us from pedestrians, et cetera, et cetera. I know it doesn't sound like this is the case in view of the recent headlines that we've had and the fatalities and misfortunes, but overall these are cases that are spoken about, but the 110 that are happening every day nobody talks about. So basically the cars are enriched with a lot of technologies that are supposed to give us better safety and take us more safely between point A to point B. We all drive somewhere and we're going back from some places. And the whole idea is to make our time more efficient and more safe.
So with this comes some risk, though, right? And that's one of the things you're talking about is the risks of connected and autonomous cars. So tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
Right. So with all that said, with fusion of sensors and a lot of data and connectivity between the car to the outside world, makes security vulnerabilities more kind of exploitable. And nowadays we have seen cases where car can be hacked from afar, as that happened. And since it is a well-known case, the Jeep Cherokee case, et cetera, et cetera. So basically what happens is the car has become very complex platform. As a matter of fact, the most complex transportation platform, way more than a plane in terms of technology and software. The car is governed nowadays with a lot of controllers, somewhere around the 100 on the average, that all are being controlled by software. Software is on the one hand, it's very easy to update and upgrade once things are found to be wrong or there are additional features to be added. Yet There is a phenomenon in software that a lot of bugs, and some of those bugs turn out to be security vulnerabilities. And this is what hackers are doing in the enterprise and data center environment. And now they are viewing the car, the autonomous vehicles, as a target. It's very attractive for hackers to try and hack a car. Think about autonomous vehicle. We're sitting in the back seat, even in the front seat, and the car drives itself, and somebody literally takes it for a ride. And that's a hacker doing it from remote, from the cloud, and nobody knows his or her location. So it makes cybersecurity issues very primary to be resolved and be tackled. And as we say, security by design. It's not an added thing that you could do aftermarket. You need to think about it beforehand during the design cycle.
Yes, indeed. So tell us a little bit more about Karamba and its cybersecurity solutions.
So Karamba puts an aim to, as you mentioned, Mike, I think we are coming, our roots are coming from Israel, where cybersecurity is kind of a battlefield tested on a daily basis. This is what the whole nation grew up on, and we're soon to celebrate 70 years. So a lot of cybersecurity companies around the world originated from Israel because of the skill set that is being developed in high-tech, high technology and advanced technology is developed in the Israeli Defense Forces. So we started the same way. But our approach was not to port existing solutions that are familiar or we are familiar with in the enterprise or the data center environment, rather bring practicality into cybersecurity, into autonomous car. We cannot envision like each one of us uses a laptop and we can see number of times a day malware signature updates. That means that our computer, which is constantly connected, has been just modified with additional antiviruses. So we took the other approach of not taking antivirus approach, rather sealing factory settings, which enables us to be one-time installed, no updates required. There is a phenomenon called false positive. So basically no false positive, meaning not blocking legitimate commands that are running on the network of the car, and also prevent from yet unknown security vulnerabilities, which is a case, rare case of IoT and automotive that allows us to apply that advanced technology. And since we came out of stealth mode in March 2016, we have received a lot of recognition from industry leaders, opinion leaders, and also from customers. We are currently engaged with 17 automakers and their suppliers. So we decided to make our home in the U.S. in Michigan, and that what made me relocate here with my wife. And be here. We are almost over a year and a half now in Michigan, which we love very much.
Hmm. So what do you think of the current status of cybersecurity measures among the automakers?
So since the case of the Jeep Cherokee in 2014, all automakers are quite aware of cybersecurity risk, and they know they go hand in hand with safety. They are inseparable because every hack basically puts people's lives at risk, if it's the users or the pedestrians or the environment. And regulators have been quite active with that regard. And especially I have to commend Michigan, Congresswoman Debbie Dingell and Senator, of course, Gary Peters. Both are leading at the Senate and at the House, are leading the what is called Self-Drive Act. Self-Drive Act basically is a call for allowing autonomous vehicles to go on the road and start practicing what real life is. The bill calls for limited amount of cars in the first 3 years. But what's good about it is that cybersecurity has become an important paragraph within those bills that are being pushed, as I mentioned, at the Senate and at the Congress. And this is very important. This is the first time where the regulators are really kind of being proactive about cybersecurity, understanding that it is inseparable from safety. And this is very important, and we see that. And of course, we support every opportunity we have to educate the regulators, NHTSA, Department of Transportation, and Congress, and the Senate, with that regard of applying cybersecurity by design to prevent cars from being hacked and putting people's lives at risk.
One of the panels that I moderated was on that very topic of who should do the regulation. Should it be the auto industry and then the regulators follow, or should it be the government entities establishing the regulations and then the forcing them on the auto industry? I know in Michigan, it's the other way. It's Michigan, of course, being the auto state. It's the industry is really driving what's going on in regulations, at least in the state of Michigan, right?
So kind of it's a delicate question because, as I mentioned, the Senate and the Congress are around pushing, with the support of the industry, of course, to allow the autonomous cars to go on the road the first 3 years in limited quantities, as I mentioned. And, of course, the industry is trying to prepare itself in due time to be able to withstand those regulations so they won't find themselves in kind of a disadvantaged position. And automakers are trying to come up as soon as possible with as many security means that will, of course, make them less liable, God forbid, if things go wrong. So it's kind of a hand-in-hand. We know how much the regulators from the state of Michigan are connected to the automakers. Automakers are trying to control the pace. But yet, I cannot generalize here because there are some that are so advanced, and I'm sorry I cannot mention names, but there are some out of here, out of Michigan, out of the three, there are at least two that are very advanced in applying cybersecurity measures, and we are happy to work with those guys. And I think they are trying to hedge themselves, trying to reduce liability, and of course, provide more and more safety to their users, car owners, and clients.
All right. So is your development office in Israel, or do you have developers here in the U.S. as well?
So here we have what we call customer support, where we provide both ends of the kind of a supply chain or a food chain. What we have here is business development, sales, and customer support. Most of the R&D is being done in Israel. As I mentioned, the skill set and experience are coming from the Israeli IDF, and we started off in Israel. We don't rule out of having here out of Michigan graduates have here some extension of the R&D, and we look forward to that.
All right, I do have to ask you the question that I ask virtually all companies we have here on the show, is that are you hiring at this point, and if so, what skill sets?
Yes, we do. We continuously hiring. We are growing fast. And as I mentioned, it's on the sales side in automotive, which is quite unique to find people who know how to handle software sales, because our solution is software, pure software in the automotive space, as well as customer support, doing here integrations and testing and validation because the process is long. And then if we find some really unique cybersecurity experts, of course, we will be more than happy to interview and see if we can hire them. So we are just finished raising more money, and all in all, we're capable of growing. Currently, we're 41 people all over the world, and we will grow, hopefully, by the end of the year to be close to 55.
Okay, Amir, we've only got a few seconds left. Please give the URL of your company for people who might want more information.
www.karambasecurity. Karamba spells with a K, and the rest is just as you hear it, .com. karambasecurity.com.
Okay. Well, we'll have to leave it there. But thanks very much for appearing on the show today. Ami Dotan, CEO of Akaramba Security of Bloomfield Hills. We'll be right back with another segment of the M-Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're indeed listening to the M-Squared TechCast on PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launch pad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more at LTU. Possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We're back with another segment.
Yeah, we really should have that camera because then it'd be able to see and hear what goes on in those one-minute commercial breaks.
Yes,
right?
and the awkward pauses when Mike and I look at each other and go,
are you
going to go
gonna
or,
start,
am I?
Or am I going to start? Okay. Okay, all right. So I'm going to start.
All right,
please start. Yes, we have Steve Dantas here, the co-president of the Virtual Reality Augmented Reality Association. I don't know if that's of Michigan or just association. Is there more to that title?
I think it's Detroit.
Detroit?
Verara Detroit.
Detroit?
That's a mouthful, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're trying to get that down. So it's actually VRARA. Detroit.
Oh, what do you call it? You call it something else.
Verara.
Verara. Yeah, that's what Matt calls it. Because I know you guys have your monthly meetings over at, where's that bell?
Lawrence Tech.
Okay, that's a shameless plug, Bell.
All right.
So, so let's talk a little bit about, now you were, we had you on a little earlier when we were talking to Matt Quinn. You're another one of those refugees from my IoT Tech Connect show.
You made it,
Oh, God. Escaped. I'm so glad that's over.
Now I know what the real purpose of that show was. It was to get guests for this show for the next 6 months or so.
Oh, hell yeah. Excuse me. I can't say that, right?
So, you can say whatever you want.
That's
it's the internet.
No FCC here.
We just try to keep it clean for general purposes.
So, and you were sharing the Mediterranean room, as it were, with Matt Quinn and his drones. Mm. You guys had a really nice setup up there. Big board. Governor came over. He was doing the VR where he was grabbing stuff and throwing it in the refrigerator or something or other, and he was really into it, I could tell. So
yeah, and I think it was Governor Snyder's first experience of virtual reality, probably. You know,
he's a good system. He may have done that.
He's done the 360 video, right? A lot of us have done the 360 video, but for him, it is being in the situation and being able to use. It was actually a GM appliances setup that David Pollock, the co-president of the VRA, the other co-president, couldn't make it today. So he had a setup where you have this refrigerator and you've got appliances and you can actually simulate that whole environment in virtual reality. So Governor Snyder got to open a refrigerator and get what he wanted from that. So he was throwing that stuff around. So it was fun.
I had a chance to experience that at Pixo VR.
Formerly known as Pixo
Factory. Sean Horowitz, yes.
Right.
So anyway, they had me all rigged up and over there, and then it was like I was in a factory moving things around in the factory. And I mean, clearly, your mind knows this is not real, but they did one thing where you're walking this girder between buildings. We had David Cole with us. I don't think David ever had seen VR before, and he was all freaked out. I go, David, it's not real. You're not really walking on it.
You're not really going to fall.
No, you're not going to fall. It's all good. So the governor really liked it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing you just mentioned about Pixo VR, right? Sean is a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And they do some fantastic stuff in the training space. But the thing is that virtual reality is actual reality.
Right.
Yeah, because our brain simulates that reality, and it doesn't matter whether you're in the real world or you're in the virtual world, because it's what your eyes tell your brain.
Right.
So if you can fool your eyes, you can fool your brain.
Right.
Which is why people are really afraid about whether virtual reality is going to take over the world. And sometimes I think, it's probably going to be better than our realities.
Who knows? Well, the one that actually people are saying is going to be much bigger is augmented reality, where you have real world and then you superimpose the computer world in it. And Pokemon Go, that phenomena of a couple of years ago, was the thing that really brought it to the fore. Everybody goes, oh, so that's augmented reality.
Right, right. And you know, augmented reality is more accessible. Like, you have your cell phone with you, right? And both Apple has released its AR kit, and Google and Android have released the AR core.
Right.
So the advantage that augmented reality has over virtual reality is virtual reality is expensive. Those headsets are still very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Right, to get like an industrial strength, real good, you know, opportunity to see virtual reality. Whereas augmented reality is right there in your cell phone, and you can use that as a means to access it.
Well, like, you could, you know, take a picture with your cell phone and just, you know, just run down the street of a bunch of restaurants, and little reviews of the restaurants will pop up.
That's absolutely right? A fantastic one use case that you have, right? And you can see even see the food, you know. So we're getting there, right? The other part that I think augmented reality really brings is if you're buying furniture. I think these are the early use case we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Is you can actually take a picture of, you know, on your cell phone, and you can place it on your carpet, and you can see how that furniture fits. IKEA is doing some great work with that. And, you know, I think that's going to be, that use case is going to expand. It's you know.
Shopping. Different. I also think training. Right. For instance, you have auto technicians constantly have to be trained, updated, because everything's, you know, geez, you remember when I used to be able to work on cars? I can't do that anymore. I don't have computers, you know.
Yep.
And so you can actually see the engine or the, whatever part you're working on, and then they superimpose in the augmented stuff and say, okay, now turn this and do this and that.
Yeah, that's production training is what I've seen is, you know, don't put the nut on that flange, put it on this other one.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it'll turn red and alarms will go off if you try to do it the wrong way.
Right, so. So,
and what a fantastic way to train new people, right, and get new skills, because we've got all this information and knowledge, thousands of years of knowledge, which we've got in our books and now we've got on our Kindles.
Right.
But what we've created with virtual and augmented reality is a new media. And this media allows you to get inside that technology and access all the knowledge, because all that knowledge is visual and you can actually play around with it. I feel that, you know, while augmented reality really gives you that encyclopedia or, you know, visual prototype of a, you know, a document,
mm-hmm.
it's really virtual reality that's going to take the lead when it comes to training, because you're talking about high consequence training. I know you were mentioning something, our earlier guests were mentioning something about firefighters, right? And mm-hmm. firefighters use that chemical to douse fires now in the training mode. Now, we could eliminate that entire training mode by just using virtual reality, right? So instead of, you know, polluting the environment further, this is just one use case, right? I picked up is you could actually create a simulated environment where firefighters could train themselves
mm-hmm.
so they don't have to pollute the environment. So that's one way of it, right? The other piece is you've got, you know, builders, construction workers who go through, you know, the whole training process. We've simulated that. A number of companies do that. I know PixoVR does that. I know we did that simulation for DTE
mm-hmm.
when I was at Vectorform. So there are use cases that I think are going to be better just because of using this technology. And if you, like you, you know, you were talking about this on the sidelines of the IoT Tech Connect last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've got all these wonderful technologies, AI, IoT,
right.
converged mobility, autonomous. The fact is that virtual and augmented reality is the front end
mm-hmm.
for all of these technologies. So we bring all these technologies together, but how does a human being experience it? I feel that augmented and virtual reality is the best way to do that.
Hmm.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the association, the VR-AR Association. You know, how did it come to be? You know, how was the Detroit branch established?
Pretty new, right? I mean, I just heard of it recently, and I can't say 6 months ago maybe or something.
I think so. It's, you know, I would say it's about a little more than 6 months old in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But the Virtual Augmented Reality Association has been around for about 3 years.
Huh.
Right? It started, you know, about roughly about 2016 by Chris Colo and you know, a couple of really enthusiastic people. It has taken shape and become like the, I would call, the number one association for the industry. It's like the early days when you didn't have an IEEE or, you know, an association of technology. So we had a bunch of enthusiasts getting together and saying, you know, let's do something where we bring the community together.
Mm-hmm.
And in, I think, a little over 2 years now, we've got, and I have these statistics because I don't remember, right? We've got 50 chapters all over the world. And all in major cities around the world. We've got about 3,900 companies registered.
Hmm.
We've got 17,000 professionals actively involved. We've got industry committees, because we're talking about a very nascent technology here, right? And as we shape this, we're going to see retail transform. We're going to see e-commerce transform.
Everything.
We're going to see healthcare transform, right? So these committees, and you know, then there's events that we run. There's a lot of research that we're doing. And I think the biggest takeaway is the training piece, because, you know, we don't have adequate manpower and skills to train. So the VRAR Association is taking the leap and saying, you know, we'll take the leap and train people. So that's the VRAR Association. So coming back to Detroit and Michigan, you know, beloved Michigan, right? David Pollock, who's my other co-president, and I, mm-hmm. about a year ago said, you know, why don't we do something in the VRAR, AI, and IoT space here in Michigan? And said, why don't we just start with augmented and virtual reality? And I had some background, you know, coming off from Vectorform, where we built some real phenomenal experiences. And David has actually been in the simulation space. So we started off in Louisville, where, you know, David was running the VRAR there. And then we said, let's take this to Detroit. And our first event was held at the WeWork in downtown Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
We were expecting 20, 30 people. We didn't think it would be a big deal. We actually got more than 80 people.
Wow.
So, you know, since then, I think we made a committed effort to build this community. We have reached out to professionals in the area and outside. We're bringing guest speakers. We are showcasing companies. We believe this will be one of the biggest generators of employment in Michigan.
Wow.
Right? You take this and you take AI and you take IoT and you put all that together. There's huge demand and there's no skills.
Yeah. Tell us how the ecosystem is shaping up in Detroit. What kind of companies do we have here? You know, what kind of employers?
Yeah. I mean, I think we've got a mix of different companies. I think the biggest, I think, group of companies that will benefit in the short term are going to be the agencies, the advertising agencies, the digital agencies, because they do a lot of work in the experience economy. So they are looking at new ways to wow customers, to attract customers. So they're probably going to be the biggest group of people that will benefit from this. The other is the IT companies, mm-hmm. which, you know, like we've got Pixel VR is an excellent example of that. We've got Chameleon Power. We've got LTU. We've got Live Picture.
Yeah, Live Picture is a company in our business incubator that is a sort of value-added reseller of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So they're involved with all of the various headsets that you can have for VR and AR.
Right.
So. Yeah, and you know, I'm working with Steven Couchman very closely and the LTU, Mark Brockie,
mm-hmm.
Because I think Lawrence Tech is setting this collaborator as a center.
Well, you're getting all sorts of publicity out of this, huh? Yeah? Okay.
I didn't even book this guest for us.
I know. You've got them all warmed up here.
Doing this on Mike.
Yes. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I just read an article over the weekend that now journalism platforms are bringing in AR. They were experimenting with it over the Olympics. And so I've already approached some people and said, hey, I got a platform you can experiment with. Wouldn't that be fun to have AR on MI Tech News? You know, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I mean, MI Tech News would be probably the first. You should always be the first.
Well, so, absolutely.
You know, have AR and MI Tech News.
I've always been the pioneer. I got all those arrows in my back to prove it, right? You know? you know, I'd love to do that. It'd be fun. I mean, you got to differentiate yourself from the others, you know, and I know Cranes ain't going to be doing it anytime soon.
Well, we're almost out of time here. I did want to ask, you know, sort of what the future holds for this in terms of the workforce. You know, what kind of skill set should people be looking at to get involved in this industry and, you know, especially younger folks?
I think that's a great question. I think the number one thing you want to do is you want to understand what that technology is. And I would say, go watch this movie, Ready Player One. If you don't know what virtual reality is, what augmented reality is, Ready Player One is playing in cinemas, and I'm not getting any commission for that, so go watch it. And
can't ring the bell on that one.
Oh,
huh?
No, you can't, unless LTU produces the next one.
No, I don't think so. But we do have some film people. So
We have film people here.
We have movie makers.
The number two thing, I think the second thing you want to do is you want to pay attention to what the Game Development Conference did recently, which is they talked about Unity as a platform. And I think Unity is where you have skill sets. It's a language. It's a platform. And they're taking the leap of building those skills. And I know that there's a demand. There's a potential 1 million jobs that need to be, you know, serviced in the U.S., and we don't have people and skills and talent. Mm. So if someone invests in Unity right now, they're going to make a move. They're going to be significant, right? The third thing I would say is, you know, be really curious. Don't apply VR and AR, and I would say this to the younger people as well as entrepreneurs, as well as to business people. Don't use VR and AR because it's the sexy, exciting thing to do. Try to find a use case for it and try to figure out how you can make an impact to society through it. And I think that's how naturally this industry will grow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Couldn't agree more. Now, one of my business partners is talking to me about doing something where you would have the 360 camera, say, at Kobo. Or we don't do Kobo anymore, right? I guess we do, yeah. But at the new Comerica Park, and you put it in a seat, and so you could sell that your courtside experience while you're at home with your goggles on, right?
You know? Oh, absolutely. And you know, I've been talking. I can't mention names, but you know, we've been talking to a couple of sports entertainment companies that actually are going to do that. They're going to bring live sports to your living room, and you don't really have to go, you know, buy one of those expensive seats in the stadiums, right? And I think it's going to be a great experience. You're going to probably all watch the Super Bowl in VR next year.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to get involved in that, Matt. What do you think?
I think so. Okay. I'll get 20th row seats on the 50-yard line.
I like it. Works for me. So
tell us how to get a hold of VRARA Detroit, please.
VRARA.
We go with the VRAR Association to make it easier.
Okay.
But the website link is, you know, www.thevrara.com. So it's
thevrara.com.
And you will find the Detroit chapter there. We have our meetings every fourth Tuesday. At the LTU Collaboratory.
Where are they held at?
That would be the Lawrence Tech Collaboratory.
Of course,
the Lawrence Tech. Yeah. Do I get a ring?
Okay.
Hit the bell. There you go. So, yes, and you can sign up online to attend. I should probably attend one of those meetings one of these days.
Well, there's always a product demonstration. That's the fun thing about it.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, you're both invited. I mean, you know, please do come. It's a great opportunity to build the community.
He's the communications director, so he'd be there anyway, right?
Yeah.
You know, so.
All right. Thanks so much, Steve, from co-president of VRARA and CEO at, is it just
digital.
Pronounced digital?
Digital.
Okay. That's DigitylL.
Yep.
Want to thank Steve and all of our guests today. Ami Dotan, the CEO of Karamba Security, keeping autonomous vehicles safe. Old buddy Victor Pitko and Ed Gardner talking about the GoFundMe campaign
and
they
we
have
do
underway.
Mean old, by the way.
To,
so.
I should say long time, shouldn't I? Well, I'm sorry about that. The GoFundMe campaign they have underway to jumpstart digital promotion of a film project talking about a dangerous chemical loose in the environment. And our first guest today, Matt Quinn, president of the Great Lakes Drone Company over in St. Joe. Pretty interesting show today. A lot of bases covered.
You know, it's just what I like is that we're getting better and better guests all the time. Is it's kind of the buzz builds, you know. We have give people a platform to tell what they're doing and let's keep it going.
Yeah, well, that's what we're about. We're about letting people know what's going on in the tech industry in Michigan. That's what we've both been about for
long years.
Long time. All right. We will be back here next Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern time. Until then, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.